D'accord.
You're listening to The Burn. Gaming stuff, blazing fast.
Hello, welcome to a new episode of The Burn, a podcast about gaming done blazing fast. I'm Aviv Manoah.
And I am Omer Kaplan. Hey, happy Friday.
Yes, happy Friday. I'm in a long weekend holiday. Like literally, I'm on a break since Wednesday. Technically, Sunday I'm working, and then we have another 2 days of vacation.
Oh, that's amazing. I would game my life away.
That's what I'm doing, basically. I'm either watching games or playing games. Right now, and that's not the topic of the episode, but I'm playing Uncharted Lost Legacy, which is the standalone Uncharted 4 expansion/sequel/the fifth installment in the series.
Nice. I haven't played that series in ages, and it's like, yeah, I don't have the hardware to do it, but it sounds amazing. All those Uncharted games are pretty good, soundtrack-wise, setting-wise. Yeah, it's a pretty cool series.
We'll talk about that more in our news. We're going to talk about Shadow, not Shadow. Ghost and Shadows are very similar things. We are going to talk about Ghost of Tsushima, which I finished. And in the meanwhile, I'm playing Paso del Kingmaker, which we talked about in the past. So
and yes. also in the pre-show.
Yes. So yes, a lot of gaming. I'm kind of having one couch game that I want to play on the PlayStation, and then I have the big girthy RPGs to play on the computer.
That sounds like a nice arrangement.
Yep.
So what's going on?
I was asking what's going on with you.
Oh no, yeah. So I was just about to say I was grinding Destiny 2 for whatever reason. I just like got into it again, started playing a ton, and then I got to a part where I remembered why I don't like power numbers on equipment and stuff. So I got to a point where, yeah, I was able to level up all my equipment to the what they call the soft cap. So you get to a certain level and then you have to grind like for forever, and every time you grind you get like one more point in your power rankings until you can get the next equipment leveled up. So been a pain, so I dumped that game and went over to play Kingmaker because you inspired me to start playing Pathfinder again after your Hebrew podcast episode, which was very good, by the way.
Thank you.
I learned a lot. I was like, yes, I'm going to go back in there. So I was telling you in the pre-show, I rolled the cleric, trying to figure out that class, what it's all about, what's my role in the party. Not much success so far, but maybe if I don't get into level 14 fights when I'm level 2, it'll be much better.
Yes, that's... That's smart. There are intentionally both single encounters in low level zones and entire zones that you're not supposed to do in when you play on like normal or up or higher difficulties. And I think it's one of the, let's say, charm of those games like CRPGs. There are some encounters you're not supposed to do at the beginning. You're supposed to go back to and stuff like that.
I have one question for you, because I heard you talk about in the Hebrew episode, and you said, well, I'm going to roll the class, I'm going to retrain because I need my favorite, like the favorite deity weapon is a glaive, and this is what I want to do. And I'm playing Kingmaker like 100% roleplay, so... I am now a cleric of some drunken god, and I'm just, I'm role-playing the character. It's like my, outside of game, I have a feeling that my deity will tell me to do something. I'll go ahead and do it, even though it doesn't make sense from a min-max perspective. So, yeah, I was just wondering, like, what's your Pathfinder experience look like?
I'm only role playing the alignment. I went with Chaotic Good, so I try to always take the Chaotic Good options, and then if there are no Chaotic Good options, I will take, well, pure good options, and then if there are no pure good options, then I look at both the lawful neutral and the chaotic neutral. Lawful good is the next priority, and then lawful neutral and chaotic neutral, and then I think to myself, what's the most appropriate to the situation, and then I try to agree with my companions on things. So Octavia is chaotic good and Valerie is neutral, lawful neutral, so they are often in conflict, stuff like that. That's the extent of my roleplay in the game. I'm trying to keep as many options open as I can. I try to take the options that will give me more content that I know is blocked behind specific choices. So I won't block myself by role-playing.
Oh, that's interesting. So yeah, so my experience is slightly different. I was like, if we're going into a combat situation and I have Amari, the barbarian, I was like, yeah, I'm going to enter my rage, I'm just going to hit people regardless if it's like, if it makes sense, if I'm behind cover, if I have my tank with me, I just like go. Maybe that's why I suck at those games, but it's fun though.
I started with an Inquisitor that was a melee character. I realized there are too many melee characters, so I re-rolled him as I respect the character as a ranged Inquisitor, which turned out really well, but then I had some problems with the game. Oh, I don't know if you did this, and we talked about this this week, which you haven't heard. Despite the ability to do automatic kingdom management, you shouldn't do it. You should play with effortless. You can't change back, which is a problem. But and that's why I started the new game.
I listen, if I have to go into the whole like mention tutorial scenario again, I don't know what I'm gonna do.
I start the new game. I put the difficulty on story and I blaze through all of the content until the same point I was in half the time. You shouldn't put the kingdom management on automatic because the game doesn't tell you anything, which is very annoying. So you put it on effortless, and then on effortless, you can't fail things. You can only like miss them because of time, because you can't do everything. You have to choose some things and not others. So effortless is good because you still know everything that's going on. While on automatic, the game doesn't tell you anything. Which is stupid.
Yeah, I don't know. So I weigh that against doing all of that stuff again and all those dialogue. I'll tough it out. It's fine. I don't want to visit Oleg at the trade post again for a while.
It takes maybe
do some dungeons.
On story mode, you can do the entire first stack in like 2 hours.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm getting tired just by thinking about it. Anyway, so that's not our main game even.
No, but...
And I want to hear all about your ghost stories.
Yeah, so opening. We didn't do the opening yet, so we are the Burn.
Yeah, we're also a podcast, yeah.
Yes, we are the Burn, a podcast about gaming done blazing fast. Each episode we discuss some games we have been playing and some news that has been happening. You can listen to all the episodes at theburn.live, as well as find... subscription link to your favorite applications. And let's dive into it. Our game of the show today is Ghosts of Tsushima. Ghosts of Tsushima was basically the swan song game for the PlayStation 4. It's an exclusive game by Sucker Punch. And then now they released... a director's cut, which is basically the upgraded version to PlayStation 5, as well as an expansion called Iki Island. Now, originally, I thought that you can only get the expansion on the director's cut, meaning you have to buy the game again, but no, you can buy a director's cut upgrade. So basically you buy the expansion for $20. So if you have the original PlayStation 4 game and you don't have a PlayStation 5, you can just buy the upgrade and then that's fine. The director's cut on the PlayStation 5 costs $70. Now, if you consider the fact that it includes an expansion, it's not bad. If you think about it like a next game generation game, a next generation game that costs $70, it's a bit iffy because like can you compare a new game to this older game? I'm not sure.
I mean, it looks amazing. Even last gen, the whole like I don't know plants and weather effects and I don't know. It looks pretty good.
Yeah. It's a good looking game. I will say that in the director's cut, they took the DualSense controller integration to the max with a PlayStation 5. There are like footsteps vibration and or scalloping vibrations and sounds coming out of the controller for like sword clashes and music for some places. So the PlayStation 5 upgrade is really, really good. Really well done. But what is Ghost of Tsushima? Ghost of Tsushima, it's an open world-ish game, and I'm saying ish because it's not compared to like, I don't know, Assassin's Creed or Witcher or stuff like that. It's not that big of a game. The main story will take you about 40 hours. You don't have to do all of the things because unlike other open world games, you don't really gain much power by doing open world stuff. You mainly do it through the story. So, so that's why I'm saying it's an open world-esque. Yes, technically it's an open world game, but you shouldn't avoid the game if you don't like things like Assassin's Creed, which will take you 100 hours to complete the map and stuff like that. If you want to, Ghost of Tsushima can be a very focused game with an amazing story. I will say this, that it's one of the few games over the last, I don't know, decade that actually made me like feel and be emotional about what's happening, especially the ending. So very, very much worth it in terms of the story. We play in Tsushima during the first Mongol invasion in the 13th century, I think. 12 something is 13th century, right? That's how it goes.
I think one forward.
So the year is 12 something. I don't remember the exact date. The Mongols from the Chinese dynasty or whatever, they conquered Japan, China, they conquered Korea, and now they want to conquer Japan. And their first step is Tsushima because it's an island directly in the middle between Korea and Japan. And we start the game by the first Mongol invasion to Tsushima with the samurai army trying to stop them, and basically everyone dies and you survive, and the lord of the island, Lord Shimura, the Jito of Tsushima, which is the Jito is the person that was appointed by the shogun to protect a specific location. And all of those things I learned through this game. Is the Jito, the Lord Tsushima, is taken captive by the Mongol Khan, which is a fictional character, but the invasion itself happened. And you...
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of Assassin's Creed vibes with all those historical things, like,
you know, yes, here the only non-historical thing is the character of the Khan, and the rest is pretty much the same, and you don't have any mythical abilities or anything like that. Although I'm kind of not sure about the geography of Tsushima Island, some of the, like, how they build the map looks a bit video gamey, but I'm not sure about it, so I won't comment any further. So the island has three parts, and the game itself has three acts, and we start by gathering allies to free Lord Shimura, and in the opening act, we start to, like, learn how a samurai can start assassinating people, and there's a very big, like, moral conflict about honor, because you're not, like, taught to kill people behind their back. You're taught to fight them head on, and the more, it's a very Star Wars story, because the more the game progresses, the more you become this persona of the ghost, and the ghost is a legend, and it fights its enemies by terror. It's a bit of a Batman story as well. So there are many tropes here in this game, and it's very good. It's very well done. It's obviously inspired by samurai movies, specifically Kurosawa movies. The game even has a Kurosawa mode in which everything but blood is black and white.
Oh, nice.
And there is, like, film grain effect and stuff. I haven't played it in that mode, but you can if you want. Thematic-wise and story-wise and everything is very good, very focused, very tight. You connect with the character, you grow to... I really disliked the main character at the beginning because he was kind of whiny, but over time he grew on me. Very, very good game. The open world elements are not too annoying. They are very, again, very thematic, very connected to the source material. You get haikus to compose. You follow foxes to divine shrines. There are greater shrines, which are like mini Uncharted games that you need to climb and find a way how to get it, sort of an environment puzzle kind of thing. And the best thing is there are, like, actual sword fighting duels, and the entire game lets you feel like you're an actual badass samurai with a badass sword, and there is a mechanic of standoff where you challenge enemies and you quickly cut them to pieces and stuff like that. So all in all, very high remarks. Now, nice. About the expansion in the director's cut, you can play it before finishing the main game. It's harder content, so the game doesn't recommend you to do it early on. I will recommend you to do it after finishing the second act, before going into the third. And I'll tell you why. Don't do it after finishing the main game. I did it. I finished the main game and then went on to the expansion, and the experience is not good. The reason for that is the end of the game is, as I said, really emotional, really satisfying. You get a lot out of it. And then you finish the game and you go to Iki Island for the expansion. And it's such a dissonance to go on and play like a normal zone in the game with normal enemies and some side stories and stuff after going through the ending of the game. So it's you get to such a peak, such heightened emotions, and then with Iki Island you just go into, like, a normal part of the game, and it's not fun anymore.
I feel it reminds me of the ending for The Witcher. So, you know, I had all the expansions. So you finish The Witcher, like the core game. It's very emotional, very heavy. Even like the epilogue is really kind of like emotional. And then you jump into the expansion and it's like you're just in a nicer area doing like solving some minor issues because you need to onboard into the expansion. It's like, man, do you just realize what I've been through? So, yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, and in the expansion, they also, in my opinion, dropped the ball on the side activities. If in the main game, the activities are all very thematic, very connected to like the samurai experience and everything, in the expansion, the activities are more gamey, a lot more like Ubisoft open world things. Like there are archery challenges, which are timed, and there is like a mini game where you need to play the flute to attract animals with the motion controller of the PlayStation, of the DualSense. So, I'll recommend the expansion if you do it as part of the main game experience. Don't come back to it. It's not worth it. It's not as good as the main game. Usually when I look at expansions, I say, yes, you want more of the experience. I actually had the same thing with Spider-Man. I finished Spider-Man and then I bought the complete edition with everything, and I finished the main game and I went to do the expansions, and beside the Felicia Hardy ones, the expansions are just not as good as the main game, and it's a real shame.
Yeah, also like you go on like a big journey in the main game, and then the expansion is kind of like a condensed experience. I mean, there are some outliers, like there are some expansions that are disconnected from the main game that give like another story. So, but yeah, I mean, after you go through such a journey with the hero, it's like, okay, so now a mini story. It's kind of like,
I much prefer the old style of expansions where they were actually a continuation of the main game. We will remember fondly expansions like Brood War for StarCraft,
or Lord of Destruction
for Diablo 2, or Throne of Baal for Baldur's Gate. So expansions in the old sense that actually expanded the game beyond what it was and was, yeah, and were not a side content.
Yeah, so now you're making me miss Diablo 2.
I don't miss any Blizzard game anymore forever.
Yeah, I know. No, yeah, So I have so can we transition to the news, because it's a good segue?
Yes. We are to the news. News.
So, by the way, it looks like an amazing game. I wish it would come out on Stadia tomorrow and I can play it, because I know my PC can't run it. I know.
It doesn't matter if your PC can run it or not. It's an exclusive PlayStation game.
Yeah, I mean, maybe in a few years, you think it's going to be exclusive forever?
None of the previous Sucker Punch games came out on other platforms.
Well, maybe one day I'll get a TV and then a PlayStation to hook it up to the TV, and then I'll play this.
Some news.
Here's something interesting that happened 3 days ago. Now, I usually don't like to discuss like leaks and rumors in news, but this was such a juicy one that I couldn't hold myself. So here's what I know that happened. So some developer was working on the GeForce Now database, and they found a couple of like placeholder for games that are going to be supported by GeForce Now, but aren't out yet. And then they leaked the list, and then GeForce said, yeah, well, those are just placeholders. We can't confirm or deny that those games are in development, but it was enough to get everybody excited. So I won't go through the whole list, but I'm going to give you some nice things.
I want you to start by explaining what GeForce Now is.
Yeah, so we're just talking about Stadia. So GeForce Now is the cloud gaming service from NVIDIA, and it's worked a little different than Stadia, in a sense that you purchase the games on your different platforms, Steam, whatever, usually Steam, and then you run them on a rig somewhere on NVIDIA's data centers, big huge warehouses full of computers. So, you know, on Stadia, you just play the game and you stream it back to your computer, and the game itself, you have to buy a new copy of it, and it's like, it's basically a closed garden platform. On GeForce Now, you just play the games you own, and you just pay for the service. So slightly different business model, but it was, and I was a beta tester for GeForce Now for the longest time, and I played a little bit of it because I got a promotion because I was a beta tester. And it's fine. I mean, I think they still have a ways to go from a latency perspective and all that kind of stuff, but everything's going to converge at some point. They just want to prove that they have the rigs and the bandwidth and the NVIDIA like computing is like good enough for cloud gaming. And it works for the most part. So they have their own database of games they support because they don't support any Steam game. And yeah, so that's GeForce Now, long story short. Let me give you some of the games that got leaked, which they can confirm or deny if that's true, but I got excited. Like I wrote in the show notes, I don't care if that's true or false or whatever. I just want the several, the following games. So first of all, there's Titanfall 3 mentioned, which Titanfall 2 to me is one of the if not the best single player campaign. Wait,
let's stop a moment. I misunderstood what you meant. I thought you're just talking about games that are going to come to GeForce Now, but you're talking about a leak of games that have not been announced at all.
Yes, exactly. They have, so it's kind of nice. They have placeholders for games that were not announced, but they're planning for support in GeForce Now. And then some of them have an actual store page with screenshots and everything. So okay. There's a God of War port that have like screenshots and everything. So it's not out yet for PC, but
it's not even talked about. What? Why did you stop?
Oh, yeah, I thought you were going to say something.
No, I'm saying it's not that it's not out yet. It's not the existence of a God of War port is not something that exists yet.
Exactly. And I'll give you some of the highlights. So this is why I got so excited, because it's kind of like ignites your imagination of like, okay, well, nobody talks about it, but what if there is a Titanfall 3 in development? That's really pretty awesome. And I mean,
Titanfall 3 in development is a lot more realistic than a God of War port.
What about Half-Life 2 Remastered?
I don't care. Okay, next.
Street Fighter 6, nobody cares about that.
Yes, exactly.
Titan Quest 2.
I don't care, yes.
No? Oh, well, there's a Ghost of Tsushima, by the way, on the list.
I don't care, I already played.
what you're saying,
a bunch of allegedly in development games got leaked because of NVIDIA's cloud service. That's the gist.
Yes. And I mean, yeah. Okay. I mean, it's in their database. It's like a placeholder that's ready for.
Let's talk about news that actually happens. Okay. I like this news because it will annoy you because all of these games will not come to any play to anything besides.
Half-Life 2 Remastered is fine. If you give me either Titanfall 3 or Titan Quest 2, I'll take either one. Like that's two of one of my most favorite games.
Why do you want Titan Quest? Why do you want Dragon Quest 2? Why do you want a 20-year-old game?
So I'm talking about like a new Titan Quest. It's because there's Titan Quest 1, there's Titan Quest expansion, and then this anniversary edition. I think it's not Dragon Quest, it's Titan Quest. It's like the Diablo clone.
Okay. There wasn't a Titan Quest 2 ever?
I don't think so. There was even two expansions.
Okay, that's my confusion, because I thought Ragnarok was a two thing. Okay, fine. I will allow you to be excited for that.
Yes, exactly. So That like that that's an amazing. I spent so many hours in that game, so it's pretty good.
Okay.
Especially by the way, when I think last week, Amazon Games announced that Lost Ark, the cool, I think it's Korean development, Diablo-esque hack and slash game, is being delayed to March of 2022, which is insane because this game has been existed for a billion years, and I had to get a VPN to play it. I just want to play the Western version, and now they keep pushing it back. So,
how are the two things connected? I don't get it.
Oh, because we're talking about Diablo clones with Titan Quest.
Okay, can you let me go to the other news because we need to finish the episode?
Yes,
thank you. Stop wish fulfilling. Anyway, so PlayStation had a showcase for the yearly showcase about their new games and announcements and stuff. And I will go over the highlights for me. So first of all, Knights of the Old Republic remake in the works. Well, first of all, now all of the games I'm going to talk about are allegedly PlayStation exclusive. So although this people say, oh, it's coming to Windows as well. Okay, so it is coming to Windows, but it's still weird to have it as a console first game. It also not involve anyone in BioWare.
Yeah,
which is also weird, but that I kind of like it. I want a remake of Kotor, and we'll see how it goes. Then we have a Spider-Man 2 from Insomniac, and they are developing in parallel also a Wolverine game in the same like video game universe, the Marvel video game universe that Spider-Man exists in. Spider-Man and Miles Morales and stuff. I'm excited for Spider-Man 2. I don't care for Wolverine because I don't like the characters, unlike everybody on the planet for some reason.
Yeah, but I mean, you know that gameplay is going to be great.
Yeah, probably. And then talking about Uncharted, they are going to do a new Uncharted remaster collection for the PlayStation 5. So they are going to like... they're going to do an Uncharted 4 and Lost Legacy remaster for the PlayStation 5 like they did with The Last of Us, a game by the same company. So that's kind of exciting. I played both of them, both newer games, but I would like to play again. I'm playing Lost Legacy right now. And then the other news is regarding God of War Ragnarok. Now, there wasn't really any... we knew about God of War Ragnarok. They showed a bunch of new game, or new characters and stuff. Longer look at the game. But the interesting news that came out of it, which is why I'm still taking a bit longer period with those news, is God of War Ragnarok will conclude the Norse saga for God of War. And the interesting part of it is not that they say, okay, we are done with two games in that storyline. The directors of the game say, like, in one of the only instances we heard something like this, is that the reason they decided to not do another game after that is because games take too long to develop. And they don't want to be stuck for the next 15 years working on basically the same game. And that's an interesting thing to say because...
It's a very... I don't know if it's a business-oriented thing to say or just like we just want to experiment and do new things. I don't know.
What do you mean business thing to say? I think it's anti-business thing to say. I think that
it's like if games take too long to make, then you want to speed up games in a shorter amount of time so you can get more money. I don't know.
No, that's not what they mean at all. I think what they mean is, and that's why it's interesting to me, it's that usually video game companies, especially AAA company, first party studios like Sony Santa Monica, are doing franchises because it's a sure thing. You know that they will be successful. And for the director of a studio to come and say, we don't want to be shackled with this franchise for another decade, it's an interesting position. It's a position that not many people are saying. Now, obviously, they are saying, we are finishing the Norse saga, which to begin with was a very different God of War experience. They are not specifically saying, we are not doing God of War anymore. Although, let's wait to see how Ragnarok turns out. Maybe they're doing God of War, but they're going to do God of War, I don't know, Egypt, and the game will be different, like the new God of War was from the previous one. So they may be saying, we don't want to get stuck with this style of games, but we'll still do God of War. I don't know. To be honest, I haven't watched the interview itself. I only read the report. The link to the report is in the show notes, and it has the full video. You can go and watch. So that's what interests me in that.
Yeah, I wanna see how that plays out. Like, to me, it read like, we want to develop. We don't want to develop a single title for a long time. We want to crank up more titles, but who's to say that? I don't know. It's gonna be like more of this, like more of the same franchise. So I don't know. We'll see.
No, I think that it's a very honest and uncommon thing from a game studio to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
That's my perspective. Sure. It's so different from like a studio like Naughty Dog, which fanatically protects their crunch culture in order to spawn out their games. So I like to hear new voices going out against what it's the norm right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I mean, I'm still on the fence. I want to say, and I haven't been like, I haven't seen the interview as well, so I want to be very cognizant of what I say. But I want to, the relationship between those studios and like the corporations is complex and not in favor of the studios. So I want to see like how much freedom they're actually gonna get out of it.
Yeah, and it's a first person studio, not first person, first party studio.
Yeah,
I like something like Naughty Dog, which are. Well, they develop exclusively for PlayStation, but they're still an independent company. We'll see.
We will see.
Anyway, that is all.
Anyway, what about Titanfall 3?
No, that's enough. We are finishing. Stop Titanfalling. You and your Titans, questing, falling.
My God, this is such a great game. I don't know. It's on sale, by the way, now. Go get it, play it.
No, don't play old games. No, don't.
Okay. Do it. I need to finish Kingmaker again. I need to figure out the cleric. All right.
Okay. This is all we had for today. Thank you for listening. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Isel and Omer is at Omer Kaplan. All of the episode is on the website, theburn.live. Please subscribe, leave your comments. And reviews on your preferred listening app. And our opening team was created by Anne Durko and Fishy Twitch, both on Twitter as well. Thank you, and we'll see you next time.
See you soon.